A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, scaling IoT with battery-free Bluetooth.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon show. This week we're going from San Diego to Sydney. I am talking to Nathan Dunn, who is the CEO of Blue Cats, who straddle the world of Bluetooth and ultra-wideband. And we're going to be talking about some really major news, which is ultra-wideband ending up in the iPhone 11. So, Nathan, you've been on the show once. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. Slightly different backdrop, as you can see, from Phoenix the last time we caught up, but it's great.
This is fabulous. So this is, the Sydney Harbour Bridge?
It is. It is. Best city in the world. And every single day looks like this in Sydney. So it's pretty tough to compete with it.
Well, when you first came on, I assumed this was some fake backdrop, but this is the real thing. Can you give us a twirl? Can we see what else you got there?
Yeah, no, this is legit. So you've got North Sydney Pool down there, probably the most scenic pool to do some laps in the world. And then we spin around the corner here. You'll see a Ferris wheel, Luna Park, an amusement park over there, another iconic landmark in Sydney. And you can't see the Opera House, but it's sort of tucked behind the bridge there. So
any work done with that distraction, but you seem to be working very hard. You've actually got a bunch of locations. Where are your offices?
So we're headquartered in Sydney, and we've got two US offices, one in Huntsville, Alabama, and another one in Austin, Texas. So it's a very good spread. If we want to get a lot of work done, I'll head to the US. So we haven't got views like this to distract me.
Well, so we want to talk about this very disruptive event that's happened. There's a new radio in the iPhone, ultra wideband. What is it? What can it do in this context? And why was it put there? We're going to explore all of that cool stuff. I do want to talk to you about an event that we kind of touched on, the prelude to that when we first talked, which is you've now integrated. You're now two companies into one. Just before we get into that, I want to do one shout out to Starbucks, which is kind of a new tradition that we've got. Starbucks are not a sponsor, but they have this amazing program that offers job opportunities for young adults with autism. My son's one of them. We're so grateful for what they do. It brings sort of hope and meaning to young people who wouldn't otherwise get a job, and they end up working in this amazing environment with really cool, friendly people and beautiful environments. And actually, my office away from my real office is often a Starbucks, and it's great that these guys are really walking the talk in terms of social responsibility and giving back. So thanks to Starbucks. And now back to the main point of this, which is talking about Blue Cats. So Blue Cats has had this, would I call it sister company? Tell us what's happened to your company structure and how that relates to bringing BLE and UWB together.
Yeah, so Blue Cats started in 2009, nearly 10 years ago, over 10 years ago. And the initial technology we embraced was actually ultra wideband. And we started doing work with one of the original pioneers of ultra wideband, a company called Time Domain, which is located in Huntsville, Alabama. And through the process of working with their team and understanding the possibilities of a real-time location technology, we ended up purchasing a lot of the IP and a lot of the product out of Time Domain, and a company was established, Plus Location Systems, and that gave us the footprint that we have today in Huntsville, Alabama. And shortly after that, around 2012, the idea for Bluetooth beacons, mobile SDK and cloud platform came up. And so BlueCats was started in Austin, Texas. Two very, very different trajectories, two completely different technologies. One was hyper accurate with a lot of infrastructure. Another one was near enough is good enough, focus on deployability and scale. And you know better than anyone, the hype around beacons around 2012 and 13, BlueCats was you know, right in amongst all of that. At the same time, ultra wideband, which has technically been around as long as Bluetooth, was really this location technology that was known for being very, very accurate, but there was a lot of effort involved. There's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of cabling, you know, read cost, and there's any number of matrices that are still published today around location technologies that have undoubtedly ultra wideband listed as the most accurate, but it's cost prohibitive. And so there were two very different trajectories, absolutely a market for that type of technology. Over the last 2 years, and certainly when we last caught up, that was the first time that we'd realized that there's an opportunity to converge the two. And we started looking at, you know, what it means to have a very, very robust location engine and platform, courtesy of the UWB legacy system, and what value that could add to more of the light touch BLE use cases that BlueCats were involved with. And so there was a lot of trial and error and engineering butting of heads, which is always a healthy thing to have. And you know, what's ensued, and you know, what we announced recently, was an official merger of the two companies operating under the single brand of BlueCats, and you know, very closely followed over the next probably 3 months. We've got a number of new product innovations that will, you know, position BlueCats as a multi-band real-time location company, and yeah, it seems very fortuitous and coincidental, but you know, the companies such as Apple, understanding the value of UWB and the broader applications, which I think the market aren't really aware of just yet, it really is a game changer. So it sets us up perfectly moving forward with you know, the recent developments with Apple.
Definitely. So catch me up, because I did look at ultra wideband in some detail, wrote the Beacon Technologies book, wanted to kind of look at what the alternatives were, and I got a sense of UWB. And then I did some product evaluations for a consulting client back before I joined Williot. And it what I saw was kind of a legacy UWB offering, which was literally 10 times as expensive as Bluetooth. You have all these hubs and coaxial cable, and the actual kind of the tags, if you can call them that, were like super expensive and churned through battery. But what I saw was, it seemed like Decawave had made some, who provide a lot of the chips in this market, had made some innovations, and there was this new generation of Beacon, ultra wideband products that weren't quite ready for prime time, and this was probably like 3 or 4 years ago. So what's happened to ultra wideband? Has the price gone down since then?
Look, the price will go down. There's no doubt about that. And you're absolutely right. There were the original UWB, was time difference of arrival. So one way effectively. So the anchor network was scanning and listening, and the tags are broadcasting. Mm-hmm. In that situation, that's where you have some real power efficiencies. So tags can last 3 years on a very small coin cell.
Okay.
What Decawave were able to pioneer was being able to get an entire PCB that would go into a legacy ultra wideband reader onto a chip, and it's the classic progression of technology, and you know it takes someone like Decawave trusting their cape. And in terms of really understanding the game-changing properties that this can provide, but the limitations around adoption is price and power efficiency are probably the two Achilles heels. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly been able to address the price aspect of it. The two-way ranging, which is effectively two compliant devices communicating back and forth, the determination of distance can be very, very accurate. That's a very power intensive process. Mm-hmm. The focus now, and I know certainly for Decawave, is to improve on that. And very quickly we will get to the point where the power efficiency from a tag perspective is a lot better than what it is at the moment. Mm-hmm. Once you've got that, then the focus is on what are the limitations of scaling this technology? And if you've dealt with the economics, mm-hmm. you've dealt with the power management, then it comes down to the tools to really scale. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, pioneers like Decawave have paved the way, and embracing this technology, the way Apple have, mm-hmm. the way I'm happy to go on the record, every smart device launched next year will also have UWB in it.
Smart device meaning smartphone or something more than that?
Yeah. No, phone. Yeah. Phones, yeah. Tablets, yeah. Everyone else.
Well, that's right, because it's not just Decawave now, is it? Many other chip vendors have come out with, it seems like, chipsets for phones and other devices.
Yeah, I mean, NXP have come out with their offering, mm-hmm. Really the leaders at the moment, outside of Apple, have produced their own, as Apple does.
Yes.
You've got Decawave and NXP, and the focus now is certainly from within the industry is around standards, is around interoperability. And there's a lot of moving parts, as you can imagine. There's a lot of egos at the table, it's important because UWB is going to change everybody's lives for the better. To do that efficiently, everyone's craving more bandwidth, that needs to be addressed, and it's in the process of being addressed.
So I thought there was an ISO standard for UWB, unlike the Bluetooth SIG, which is a SIG, or not. Did I get that wrong?
There's a standard that's being authored at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's an IEEE working group working on a new standard, and that working group includes every major company that we could imagine would be adopting this technology. So I think the objective is to have an authored standard available either at the end of the year or certainly beginning of next year.
Okay.
And so that will really lay the foundation for more local organisations like the FCC to address some of their historic regulations that, by their own admissions, are conservative and overprotective. Mm-hmm. The quicker that we can get to a clearly defined standard around certifications of modules and devices, I think the better for everyone.
So is UWB usable in every country in the world in the same way as Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, or are there kind of some no-go areas?
I know Japan from memory. Yes. And you, forgive me, I can't remember the last time I brushed up on Japanese communication regulations. But I know Japan and Korea, I believe, have some rules around the bandwidth and power restrictions and things like that.
Okay.
But yeah, you have to keep in mind that a lot of the regulation was put in place coming from a position of fear of the unknown. And as you can imagine, you don't want to be anointing or enabling a particular technology to all of a sudden interfere with aircraft landing radar or you know, satellite communication or anything like that. So there was a lot of unknown that has driven the or not standards but the regulations. So technically, some of them are reasonably prohibitive. But there's no real basis for that. So I think this groundswell, and you know, there are submissions underway at the moment in front of the FCC that really lay out a logical argument of how we can move forward.
But just so everyone understands, you can use UWB in the United States, the province of the Federal Communications Commission. So what would the submissions be to change?
There's two things that are going on at the moment. The first one is the regulations that are in place at the moment prohibit a fixed outdoor device transceiver utilizing UWB. So at the moment, you can't have a transceiver that is broadcasting UWB in use outdoors.
Okay.
Now there are special dispensations for that. You know, Zebra with the NFL tracking is a good example of that.
Yes.
And again, this is that was put in place thinking about airports and various astronomy organizations and other things back in 2002. Now there's been no documented complaints of interference or issues created with ultra wideband used in these special cases. So, that's one aspect of the FCC regulations that really needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a number of organisations that have been very vocal about why they support that change. And it's not a land grab as such. The support is also offered with a very plausible interoperability coexistence type scheme. The other thing that is in front of the FCC at the moment is the expansion of Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And this is where having Apple jumping on board UWB a lot of the car manufacturers,
yes,
really pushing it as well, adds weight to that that argument, because you know, any man, his dog, could side with an argument of, hey, we need more Wi-Fi bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you give Wi-Fi an extra gig, they're going to use an extra gig. If you give them, 500 meg, make them innovate a little bit, they could probably still get away with it. Mm-hmm. And so the companies looking to build a future on UWB historically have been very underrepresented in terms of someone at the FCC spending time on Google and saying, hey, there's a whole industry that relies on this technology. Thankfully, with the mad rush and the increased awareness, even over the last couple of months, it's something to be taken seriously. And again, that's an interoperability discussion as well.
Yeah.
And so they're the two dynamics that need to be addressed for the right reasons so that this technology can coexist.
And one last thing before we go to Apple. So the way ultra wideband works for the geeks, and we won't get too geeky because I don't think I'm capable of doing that, but Bluetooth, there's the 2.4 gigahertz ISM band, it's unlicensed spectrum, and that's where Bluetooth sits along with part of Wi-Fi. Ultra wideband doesn't work that way, does it? It basically kind of spans an ultra wide band that goes over many other areas that are already being used for other stuff, but it just coexists. So how does that work?
Yeah, so it's unlicensed spectrum as well, and you're right. Ultra wideband can be anywhere from low 6 gigahertz to 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 gigahertz. It's been that way because there hasn't been a specific use case for any of the regulators to be focused on. So traditionally, a lot of UWB in play today operates around about the 6.5, 6.7 gigahertz center of frequency. And so that's where it gets interesting. If you've got Wi-Fi coming up, sneak up into the low sixes, that's where some of that crossover potentially comes into it. Technically the way it works, and the simplest way to think about it is, and this is why it's so fantastic for location, is a UWB pulse is very, very sharp, and it has a very, very distinct leading edge. And whereas, BLE and Wi-Fi builds up to max power over a short ramp-up period. So it's very hard to determine when you started hearing those pulses, those signals. And think of it as if someone yelled immediately, you hear them immediately.
Yeah.
If someone started whispering and then gradually built up,
yeah.
If your ears are better, you heard it earlier and things like that. So it's that sharp leading edge that sets UWB apart, as well as a lot of the nuances of the preamble and various other things add a huge amount of security that just doesn't exist today with either NFC or BLE or Wi-Fi.
Okay, and so this gives us the ability to time the arrival of a signal and therefore calculate the distance very precisely because there's this sharp edge.
Absolutely, and it's also less susceptible to multipath. And if it is a result of multipath, you can identify that now because you've got that leading edge reasonably well defined.
Okay.
So it's a very it is ridiculously accurate. When everything's set up properly, and so
ultra wideband can be used for different things. It can be used for measuring distances and therefore measuring locations. It can also be used for data transmission.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Now let's talk about the iPhone. So the iPhone now, I've got one of the Pro, whatever it is, iPhone 11 Pro Max, expensive phone anyway, and it's got this new radio. Is it U0 or something like that?
The U1 chip.
U1, okay.
Yeah, which I think is short for you wonder what it can do. But
so what can it do? What can it do? Tell us.
Well, yeah, we'll never know until Apple decides that we're lucky enough. But look, it's a UWB chip. It's interesting that there's soon to be multiple antennas in the iPhone 11 as well, mm-hmm. Which lends itself to being able to potentially broadcast and receive. There's also some interesting angle of arrival and an angle of departure functionality at some point. The publicized use case, which was a little bit of a footnote from the 11 launch, was the ability to target one individual in a group and airdrop files.
Mm-hmm.
classic case of the location and the proximity, that peer-to-peer accuracy. And you're right, the UWB was originally conceived for data transfer. So the data capabilities are quite impressive as well. That's the use case. There's a mountain of patents that Apple have around some of the use cases. One recent one that I think was released yesterday is around UWB functionality in wall sockets, in power sockets in the home, and effectively being able to map the floor plan of an environment based on these devices, understanding where they are in relation to each other, and then also take it a step further, potentially wirelessly charging a device if it's within proximity of a wall socket.
Interesting. So I misspoke earlier. So ultra wideband will be used for data transfer. It'll be used for AirDrop, but it'll also be this ability to measure, I guess in this case, somehow you'll have two people with one of the new phones. They both have a U1 radio in, and iOS will know I'm pointing this phone at you rather than my competitor who's like to the left of me or whatever. Is that the basic idea?
It is. That's the use case that they've put forward, and obviously leveraging the other MEMS sensors that go on in that device, being able to understand orientation and various other contextual movements, that the spatial awareness, not only within the given space that you're in, but other devices within range, and that constant updating of that spatial awareness. It's mind-blowing, what the possibilities. You think of augmented reality, for example, in its simplest form, just understanding, if you augmented reality or VR for that matter, understanding, the context of, where your hands are in relation to your goggles, in relation to your feet, in relation to someone else playing a game. That is all possible in absolute real time to centimeter level accuracy with UWB.
And I think you alluded to the fact that there's multiple antennas, and we've talked about Bluetooth 5.1 angle of arrival, but what I'm hearing from you is the angle of arrival with UWB would potentially be possible with that, which is maybe how you know whether someone's pointing at at another person or the someone who's next to them. Is that, you think, yeah, that's it?
Look, it's feasible. I think I wouldn't get too hung up on the AirDrop use case that was. Sure. I almost consider that an Easter egg in Apple's presentations. And as they're fantastic at doing, the future was hiding in plain sight when they just had the little U1 chip dwarfed in there with other things. So, but yes, I mean, angle of arrival is being accommodated in a lot of the silicon. Angle of arrival, angle of departure. There's still a lot that goes on, as through your experience with Williot. Once you've got the silicon, that's when the work starts.
Yes.
But it's certainly baked in there. How that relates to the iPhone, any other smartphone, depending on the ecosystem that it's operating in, depending on what access everyone's allowed to have to the chip, there are so many variables here, but it's certainly a game changer.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I think a lot of us were expecting, I watched this announcement waiting for, some 5-minute segment where someone was going to walk on stage and do some cool demo, and it never happened. And the thing that I was expecting was this much speculated UWB set of beacons that were going to be used to do lost and found to a level that could only be dreamt of with, say, a tile product or something like that. Do you think that's real or not?
Yeah, I do. I think that'll be next cab off the rank from a hardware perspective. Yeah. And look, you know, tile and the like are obviously, I have no doubt that they're planning their UWB strategy as we speak. And you know, that consumer focus, you're obviously at the whim of you know, the ecosystem that Apple will allow you to integrate into. And it's certainly a game changer. You know, it Beacon's 2.0, if you want to call it that. The location and the proximity is going to be mind blowing for people. Now the thing that you know doesn't change. You know, when you talk about Beacon, certainly from a consumer standpoint. Aside from locating your assets, you know, if we look at the original hype around Beacons from a marketing standpoint, whatever else, yes, UWB is going to infinitely greater accuracy and the ability. You know, think of UWB integrated into electronic shelf labels in a grocery store. You know, frightening levels of accuracy, but all roads still lead back to the user permission and the use case is the value proposition there. And you know, you would have seen the recent updates in iOS 13 with more visible reminders of this app has been using your location in these locations over the last 3 days. You know, do you want to continue that? And I think that's absolutely brilliant. In terms of that, just reinforces that if you don't have a value proposition that you can communicate to me in 25 words or less, I'm not going to let you track me. And I think it's valid.
Well, this is, I mean, I'm so pleased that you brought this up because I have very mixed feelings about this. You know, what the privacy advocate in me says, fantastic. Well done, Tim Cook, for taking the high road. And shame on all those companies that were sneakily using location to make money and not sharing value with the consumer. The flip side is, it was just incredibly annoying when I did the upgrade. I'm like, and in the end, I really didn't want to spend 5 minutes or even 30 seconds thinking about yes or no. I just said yes to everything because if you're getting 20 or 50 requests for something, it just becomes like the privacy terms and conditions where I don't want to risk that this isn't going to work. I'm just going to say yes to anything. But yep. I have to say what's happened since is I'm getting, you know, rather than just can we use Bluetooth, you get these maps, these scary maps of where it's been used. And I think that is very effective. And I have to confess that in some cases I've said yes, in other cases I have said no. What's your view on this? Do you think this is just Apple posturing against Facebook and Google and trying to look whiter than white and annoying us all with a bunch of pop-ups we really don't care about and want to see? Or do you think that this is going to stay with us and we're going to constantly have to click on these buttons because it's good for us?
Look, I think you know, attack is the best form of defense. In some instances, so I think, look, the underlying theme I think globally is the horse has bolted on real privacy. Let's be honest. I mean, you know, we've seen overnight Amazon launching picture frames with microphones in it, so you can be talking to Alexa wherever you are. I mean, you know, the horse has bolted. You know, let's be realistic. I think it's a great thing. I think to your point. I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't a mass exodus away from a lot of location tracking services, mm-hmm. purely down to the laziness of that experience that you just relayed. When you update, you just hit yes. I don't want to deal with it. I mean, there should be $1 million prize for anyone who reads the terms and conditions on anything hiding at the bottom.
They should have a little Easter egg. $50,000th person gets a Tesla or something, you know.
100%. it wouldn't cost them a cent. But look, I think it is valid though. I mean, at the end of the day, you should have a right to access all the information that a particular app or a particular company is collecting on you. But the trade-off is we're so used to these devices now, and with everything we've talked about today, it is becoming part of our daily life for the right reasons. And so, the trade-off may be from a privacy standpoint. And I guess there has to be an element of trust. And it's not a word that's bandied around when you talk about the big tech companies all that much. Mm. But, there's not a lot, let's be realistic, there's not a lot, that we can do about it. Unless you just want to opt out and say no. And so I think from a, taking the other approach, forgetting about sort of the overall ecosystem and the Apples and Googles and Facebooks of the world, looking at it from a marketer's standpoint or an app owner's standpoint, there just has to be that value proposition. They're 100%. It's not let's just get location. It's more data points we've got, and some has to be that value proposition. And there's a ton of value propositions. And I think that was the challenge with beacons initially, was marketers went from no idea what people were doing in relation to their real estate to this granularity that has only been available through Google Analytics on a website.
Yeah.
And I think that shone a light on, we don't know what we want to say to these people. Now, the next wave is going to give you a very, very finite opportunity to say the right thing to the right person if the value proposition is there.
So that'll be interesting. I do want to, just before we wrap up, we've been talking a while, but this is really interesting. I want to go back to a few more questions about what does this mean and why and what. So let's assume that, well first of all, I guess, is there any point speculating about why the beacons appeared? Do you think they just ran out? So I've heard like two schools of thought. One is these ultra-wideband tags, beacons or whatever are going to be amazing, and Apple was just saving enough time so that they could really showcase it, to, oh, they actually don't work, and so they decided not to to show them. I'm assuming you're more on the former than on the latter explanation as to why the big reveal wasn't revealed.
Well, I mean, look, they don't work is open to interpretation. I know there are power management issues, which is why some of the alleged designs showed a replaceable battery, which makes sense. Look, Apple's brilliant at laying the foundations, letting companies in the real world connect the dots. And then it just so happens that everyone ends up exactly where Apple wanted everyone to go. And I think the other aspect of it is probably wanting to get iOS 13 and now 13.1 out there, have an install base, get it in the hands of developers, so that when they do make the announcement, it is the walk on stage and here's your augmented reality. I've got no doubt they're probably going to be turn an iPad towards the audience and there are balloons popping up and people have got tags under the seats. Who knows?
But So
I'd put it down to being prudent in that regard.
Yes.
And look, it's and as we've seen before, they may never do it. Who knows? But someone is going to, and the technology's there that that experience is going to be real at some point.
Yeah. So what does this mean? Let's assume the kind of the positive interpretation of making sure that you've got it right and you've got enough devices out there and so forth. Do you think this means that the Bluetooth beacon is dead?
Not necessarily. I think there's certainly a role for the two to coexist. Keep in mind backward compatibility is a big thing, certainly probably over the next 3 to 4 years, however long it takes people to cycle through devices. And as you mentioned, the iPhone 11 is not the cheapest handset on the market, so It'll be up to the rest of the handset manufacturers to be adopting it and releasing products next year to really get that mass adoption. So I think absolutely there's a role for BLE moving forward, and that's why I think it's important that RTLS providers aren't just locking in on a single band. Because it's such a dynamically changing landscape for the positive. The danger is that so many people jump on the bandwagon of something like UWB, and then there's a lot of misfires, which there inevitably will be, and people get disillusioned with it.
Yes.
But I think absolutely there's a role for both. It's certainly a focus for us, and given the journey that we've been on over the last 10 years puts us in a position where we've absolutely got a dual band platform and approach to our hardware. The ability to have a UWB and BLE tag and ecosystem is well within our roadmap.
Yeah, I mean, the way I always look at these things is it's another tool in the tool chest, and there's no such thing as one tool that just does everything perfectly. No. And so, you want to work with a solution designer, an architect, a craftsperson who can use the right tool for the right job. And if he turns up with only one tool, then you kind of got your suspicions about what the yeah. answer is going to be. And I guess a big part of what you offer with Blue Cats is demonstrably being able to have both options at your fingertips. So kudos to you for that.
And look, that's important. When you're dealing with I will say, the immediate future for Blue Cats has nothing to do with smartphones. The focus for us is really on enterprise and industrial style applications, where you're having a return on investment discussion with someone within the first 15 minutes of explaining what your solution is capable of. Now, in all my discussions with anyone to do with marketing with BLE beacons, return on investment doesn't come up, and so. It's fantastic what's happening, with smartphones, because absolutely there's a whole world that opens up on its own, let alone being able to introduce smartphones into the environments that we're working on. But the ability to start with a single trick or a single tool, but as an organization wants to grow with your solution, or as other stakeholders in an organization realizes, hey, maybe I could use that for something else or something that I'm focused on, the ability just to extend that capability without having to be a new dedicated system or a new dedicated API or whatever it may be, that's really the value that we're seeing moving forward.
Very good. Well, Nathan, thanks for spending time with us. Beautiful backdrop.
Thanks for having me.
I think you win a prize for best, most appealing backdrop, but also just fascinating conversation, very thought-provoking. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Always good to chat. And I'll see you stateside very soon, no doubt.
I hope so. Cheers. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye. We have the tradition about what songs you would take on a trip to Mars, and just because you've been on the show once doesn't mean to say you get away without having to talk about something that's got nothing to do with technology to start off with. So, what three songs would you want to listen to now?
So I've gone for a little bit of a mixture. Probably the first one, a great up-and-coming Aussie band called the Teskey Brothers.
Huh.
Highly recommend you look them up. Right. And a song called Crying Shame by the Teskey Brothers. Now, the caveat there is, provided I can whip up an old-fashioned or two or three en route to Mars, then that song is the perfect accompaniment to that. Second song, personal favourite of mine, A Pirate Looks at 40 by Jimmy Buffett. Actually, a song I sing to my kids when they're going to bed ever since they were little. So that's pretty meaningful. And then the third one, which is an iconic song that probably not a lot of people have heard of, so it doesn't necessarily make it iconic, but The Cape by Guy Clark. Absolutely brilliant song, and anyone that has chased an idea or a vision through a lot of hard times and a lot of toil, it's, you know, the crux of the song is you know, spread your arms, hold your breath, and always trust your cape. So it's a pretty apt song, I think. So
that's a great song. It's a great reason. Thanks very much for that.